If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, the show where we cover the games news from the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja. I am one tooth less and somewhat ill still and a little bit jet lagged, but that won't prevent us from doing a fantastic show today, because to pick up the slack is Mark Turpin the Terpster. How are you doing, sir?
I have too many teeth, Patrick, so... If I could give you one of my wisdom teeth, I would, for you would be wiser and have a full complement of gnashers.
I am 1/4 less wise than I was before my trip to the US.
Yeah. Was it one of your wisdom teeth, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was.
Oh, so well, that's fine then. That's for, good. Yeah.
For those who don't know, I broke a wisdom tooth on the day I landed in the US had to have it removed, or the day after, and had to have it removed in some shifty dentist in LA. And that was a little bit weird. And it made BlizzCon, because that's why I was there to go to BlizzCon, interesting, let's say. I haven't eaten solid food in like 10 days and I've lost 2 kilos. So there's silver lining.
There you go. I like that. I'm going to get on that then.
Yeah.
The crack your tooth and soup diet. What did you break it on?
Nothing. So I've been clenching my teeth. I think it had a cavity and it accelerated.
Stress.
And yeah, basically the stress of being a professional independent podcaster.
Yeah. I
can't even imagine if we ever have kids, which you do. And apparently you abandoned your child going to BlizzCon and she didn't recognize you when you came back.
No. She wasn't sure who this guy was. I've won around again. It's nice. It's like the film 50 First Dates. It's lovely. You know, it's like, you know, I have to every day is a new day and you have to work as hard as the day before, or harder.
Isn't it just like you feed her? It's not like a cat. It doesn't love you because you feed
it. I don't think so. I'm not sure. I give her food, but she can feed herself. And one of the funniest things is just seeing her just walk around eating a banana. It's just weird. It's like, yeah, I half made that. And look, she can eat bananas. you just get kind of, you know, interesting
pride
little kind of
in
development.
Your heart,
exactly.
Basically.
Like, oh my God, I remember I used to have to cut up bananas for a nap, but look at her. She just eat a banana all by herself.
That's amazing. And I will feel the same once one of my spawns does the same, because now it's
you're like, that sounds really weird, man. Yeah. That sounds stupid. You're stupid. And then, yeah, you're like, they were eating a nectarine the other day. They peeled off all the skin. I'm going to go again. You know, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Time does fly.
It does. It's already been, has it been a week since we left BlizzCon?
Yes. No.
Has it?
Yeah.
Wait, I can't.
Ish.
Okay. But anyway, BlizzCon is going to be the main topic of this show. We'll also be talking about, we have price leaks for the Nintendo Switch. We have incredible success for the NES Classic. We have Sony PlayStation Pro being available. A bunch of games coming out soon. But first, a big portion of the show is going to be talking about BlizzCon, what was announced there, how important it was, how cool it was, or how uncool it was in maybe in some cases. Ooh, like maybe, that maybe. Teaser. And of course, to talk about Blizzard Games, Terpster is always a good person to have on. So thank you for being here. Let's launch into it just right now with the opening ceremony with the 25 years video that was really emotional. Blizzard turns 25 this year. And even more interesting was the fact that the third co-founder of Blizzard.
The founder?
Yeah,
like basically. The guy whose idea it all was.
Alan Adham.
Silicon and Synapse stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so basically, I didn't realize this. I read an article about the founding on Blizzard a few days ago. I think it was on Polygon, or I can't remember, but basically, he was the one who wanted to make video games, and he sort of recruited, he floated the idea to Mike Morhaime and Frank Pierce to create the company. So they were very adamant to say that he is the main guy, and now he's back. And after having taken 10 years off, he was getting he helped make most of the big games until World of Warcraft. He was instrumental with Rob Pardo in the development of World of Warcraft. He left because he was getting overworked and he wanted to do something else. And now he's back. I think that's significant to an extent. But the most interesting thing, do you know what he does now?
No. What does he do now?
So let me tell you what he does now. That was amazingly built. He heads the incubator within Blizzard. So they're basically, he's managing new teams that create new games, or that try to, you know, that try to create new things and hopefully some different, interesting, daring things. But that now, you know, Blizzard has grown so large that they have specifically an incubator department, which is interesting and weird at the same time for a video game company. But I have hopes.
You got to love that, though. Exactly. Just off the back of Overwatch and Hearthstone, you know, being kind of newer properties to the Blizzard repertoire. You know, I think they see the value now that Overwatch is probably their biggest game. Yeah. 20 million players active. It's definitely what they kind of seem to be doubling down on with Overwatch League, which I'm sure we'll chat about as well. It's vitally important that they don't just make more of what they've made. And I think that that's really kind of refreshing to see that, you know, Adam's kind of focus is on the future. So that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that tells you they're not just going to be doing already, you know, they have what, 5-6 games, and they're not just going to be doing those. They're going to look for more. I think it's a really unique situation in the video game industry. One company that creates, basically that has within its itself a bunch of different game studios, really, and that work together in parallel to create different games. They've grown really at a rate. When I was there, when I was working there, it was, you know, it was in the process of growing, but it was definitely smaller. And now it's a pretty unique and amazing, you know, status for one single game company. I don't think off the top of my head there are others that are that big. You have publishers that publish games from different studios and different companies.
That's the tricky thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, you look at something like Bethesda, or I guess it would be, yeah, like EA and Activision and Ubisoft, you know,
Yeah, but those have different studios that they publish the games but they're completely independent. Or not completely,
they're fragmented,
you know, they're independent
across the globe, sort of thing. Exactly, yeah. I think that's the thing, is Blizzard is all intents and purposes a publisher, and its Blizzard studios happen to all be based at the same Irvine HQ,
but they're in different floors
and different, you know, things.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, if you were to have development start coming out of Austin or in the EU, would it still be, you know, would it change it? Would it be different?
The thing is, I don't think that would never happen. That would ever happen. They are very, very, you know, the company culture is really important to Blizzard, and that is part of it. They need to keep everything when they can see them. And even for other types of development, everything was very centralized in Irvine, so I don't see them spreading those departments over the globe. But so anyway, yeah, that's pretty interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what is going to come out of that incubator department at Blizzard. You mentioned the other huge news, I think. Actually, it's probably bigger. The really big news
bigger
that came
huge.
Out of BlizzCon was the Overwatch League, which is going to start in 2017. And without, you know, we can get into the details, but to me, that was the biggest announcement. Even if it maybe didn't feel that way at the show, Overwatch League is really big, right?
Huge. I mean, if you've got to think about, so we know there's 20 million people playing. We know that it's emerging now as an esport. And the World Cup was amazing to watch. Other Overwatch tournaments have been really good fun as well. It's definitely got something. And basically, Blizzard's now financially and logistically committing to setting up an official league, which will have, you know, its own broadcast times, fixtures, league and scoring tables, player contracts. You know, it will be.
Yeah, that's the important part
huge.
To me. The player contracts, I mean, the way it's going to work, they're going to sell the licenses to, you know, it's going to work by town. So you're going to have probably a Paris team, a London team, et cetera. And they're going to sell the licenses to private owners, but those are going to be bound by the Blizzard overseeing contract and conditions for those teams and leagues. And they're going to be paying the players. So that means that you're going to have a huge boom of different, you know, professional players that are going to be able to make a living when it's been really difficult now, and they had to have sponsors and, you know, owners that and win tournaments and all of those. Now they will have, just like Riot does with their league, but apparently with more stability and the local element that will make it easy for you to root for your team. So yeah, it's a lot of structure and growing the thing, I think, significantly.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see kind of how big it gets for the first season. You know, will it just be NA? Will it be global? How will they define? You know, how many teams are in each league? How are they ranked? You know, if I want to have a team for my town, is that possible, or is it? You know, does it have to be larger regions or? That, I think, will be really fun and interesting to see how kind of granular it goes. But I think in the fullness of time, it will match, you know, any other sports franchise out there where you will have, you know, each town having their own team. And then the really successful ones kind of building a team that goes on to dominate the world.
Yeah. And that I don't know if they will switch it to countries when it's the, I mean, I think a lot of it is not fully fleshed out even for Blizzard. They know they want to do it, they have a rough idea, but maybe they don't have all the details. My understanding is that it's probably going to be only North America for the first season. That's a possibility. And then expand it in 2018 to the entire world. But the, you know, it's, we've also seen something very similar for Heroes of the Storm. So it seems they're moving in the same direction esports wise. But Overwatch is definitely something that seems to be getting significantly bigger than I think that than we thought it was going to be when it first released.
Oh,
we
definitely.
Thought it was
going to
be successful.
Being the biggest franchise up against Warcraft and things like that. You know, WoW is a different game with a different payment model and all the rest, but has never had 20 million active accounts playing.
Well, so I don't know if it's active accounts that they have for 20 million. They have 20 million accounts, I think is the number. I don't think they're all active.
Oh, you don't think they're all playing? Okay, well, maybe then.
I don't,
because WoW's obviously
so.
Had 100 million announced, like, I don't know, what was it, like
3 years
ago? 10 years ago? Was it
three years ago? Yeah.
I'm sure they've hit more than that anyway. Yeah. That
it was already more when they announced it.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see kind of, you know, in the fullness of time, which is the bigger franchise. Yeah. But Overwatch is so great. And I mean, Blizzard's already spending so much money with the animations, the shorts, telling more story, making it more broadly appealing. that a sports league just really completes that whole offering. Yeah. So I think Overwatch is going to be a much healthier game for it. You know, there's going to be a lot more kind of interest and focus and time and effort put into it. And then I just look forward to being able to go down to a pub and watch it on TV with friends. You know, that will be the hope, is we start seeing, you know, kind of more esport bars popping up because you can enjoy those sorts of activities with friends, and that's where they are best.
Yeah, and cheering for your team.
I will cheer for whoever's winning. That's I'm a glory supporter to the end. I don't care. You know, I'll figure out who's the favorite, cheer for them, and if they lose, then I'll just be like, oh, wasn't that amazing that the team I actually wanted to won? That was good. I'm glad I can finally say, guys, yeah, I supported the other team. Sorry, excellent. I was just joking with you all. You know, that's excellent. My hope.
So we have a bunch of other announcements for Overwatch. Sombra is available on the PTR. That's a new character that is all sneaky and hacky. And by the way, one of the other excellent moments in the opening ceremony was the...
excellent, really?
The reveal of Sombra was fantastic. You didn't like it?
No. What? I thought it was the cheesiest, most kind of like... For the whole time, everyone was joking on like Reddit and Twitter and stuff like, oh, what happens? Do you reckon Jeff Kaplan's going to go out and then like the presentation's going to get hacked or something like that? And it was all like, ha, 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 ha. And then, you know, it was Mike Morhaime, but they actually hacked it.
No, but it was great because they had that emotional 25 years anniversary video with, you know, the remembering of where they came from and why they wanted to make video games in the first place and all of that. And then they showed, they said they were going to show the launch of Overwatch that they had on, that they had filmed and see how it went from basically the situation room and, you know, with all the screens. And then the screen flickered for a second. And the reason I liked it wasn't so much because the Sombra hacked the video that Blizzard was making. It was because there was a moment when people thought that there was a problem with the video for a second or half a second. And then everyone realized it was Sombra hacking it. And then everyone, you know, went into that mode, you know, together. And that's what BlizzCon is about, right?
I guess so. I would have much rather Morhaime had been on stage just being like, guys, we're getting hacked. Oh, shut it down. Shut it down. And then you saw like Kaplan bust out a fire axe and just start swinging away at a network server cable. So that just hacking through. And then like, oh, God, I think I got it, guys. I think and then it goes in. I would have liked more campiness to it, personally.
You know what? I think you should be in charge of scripting the next reveal.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. We just have to hope it's another hacker. And I mean, I could go out as a stunt Morhaime, though. I'd love to do that. What a year it's been for esports. Overwatch,
maybe work
announced,
you know. A little bit more on that impression.
It's a perfect impression.
Just a little bit. So we also got a new arcade mode with a 1v1 and 3v3. 1v1 is random. You both get the same character. 3v3 has no respawn. And so there are a bunch of other little things in the arcade mode. But other announcements, Sombra, 1v1, 3v3, what do you think?
So Sombra is really fun to play. Kind of more like Tracer than I thought she'd be. She works. I think I can see a place for her. The hack is super strong. And I think it's always going to be, they can't really nerf that and still make it fun to play her. So it starts to make me feel like the competitive team comps now have one less character to pick. So we'll see. We'll have to just see how it all goes because people may be like, you know, she's not strong enough for her trade-off. But when you look at Ana's an automatic include in teams now with the nano boost, I think Sombra's hack is just as powerful at the right time. If you can hack the right people at the right time, that'll change the flow of the game. So Sombra's amazing. Arcade mode is really, really fun. Like I said, 3v3 is actually, I think, more fun than 6v6 normal mode. I really enjoy that. I think it's a much more kind of measured game. Equally, the arcade as a whole is a great thing. You're having the option to have these different play types in there. People can rank them. You'll see a public kind of love for it. We've got the server, custom servers coming soon, TM. So that would be really good as well, just to see
the kind of server browser, game. Basically.
Yeah, server browser, yeah.
It's probably going to be a mode, yeah, mode browser.
Yeah, exactly. But it will allow people to kind of, you know Hanzos or something like that. And then if that's the top mode, then it might be Blizzard goes, you know what? Shit, man, we need to fix Hanzo.
Or something to that extent.
Yeah, well, everyone loves Hanzo. Just, you know, pick another hero for one time. and yeah, I think great additions. I think Overwatch nailed it across the board. All of their stuff was absolute golden at BlizzCon.
Very happy with what they announced there as well. No, we could talk about the other tidbits, but let's jump to World of Warcraft, which I remember we were doing other things when that panel happened, the specific World of Warcraft What's Next panel.
Yeah.
And we were being inundated with tweets of people saying, are you watching this right now? My mind is blowing. Basically was the content of the messages I was getting. And it's true that there's, you know, they talked about a small patch, which was going to bring tiny things very soon, and a bigger patch, 7.2, with, you know, a new zone, a new world quest, raid dungeons, flying, specific class mounts for each class, more artifact quest lines, PvP brawls, which are super weird and could be fun, like you get a 15 versus 15 characters on an arena map, Eye of the Storm battleground with goats that can push you off the map, things like that.
Knockbacks and stuff like that. Knockbacks,
yeah. And 7.3, they only hinted at it, but basically 7.2 closes the story of Legion, but there's still more happening in 7.3 with Argus, which is, I won't get into the details for people who don't care about WoW, but basically what came out of it was, we realize you had too little content with the previous expansion, Warlords of Draenor, so we're going to drown you in content for this one. You're never going to get
enough.
We're
getting waterboarded with content right now. And we're going to be like, I didn't want any more content. I can't handle the content. And they're just going to keep chucking it in our face. I mean, firstly, 7.15 makes a lot of sense. So what they said is previously they would have held back on releasing features till the big feature was done. But now they're saying, like, you know what? If this is done, let's get it out. So, you know, we're going to have micro holidays. So Anchorage Remembrance Day is coming up. And basically, I'm assuming the server's going to crash a lot. I forget what they get. So basically there, we have a day where I think, are we gathering resources or are we just having a big PvP battle?
I can't remember, but there's something happening in Silithus, and it's a faction battle of some kind. And the faction that wins...
Region-wide, though.
Yeah. But the faction that wins is going to get their flags up on the gates of Anchorage for the next year. And for those who don't remember, Anchorage was a big event 10 years ago that crashed all the servers because everyone went there in that zone. And it was interesting. But yeah, so that's one of the micro holidays. Bunch of them planned.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's fun to see those sorts of things just kind of adding in stuff for people to do. It's kind of like if they had put this in as content, people would be, you know, up in arms. But they're like, hey, this is all extra, guys. This is all extra. We're just putting this stuff in just so that for some people out there, they're going to like this. It's not cost you a raid tier. It's not going to mean you can't do this or that. You know, it's just stuff coming. Also, Mists of Pandaria, time walking. Dungeons are coming, which is great. Brawler's Guild's back, and loads of other stuff. So it's really good to see Blizzard thinking, you know, okay, well, let's, how do we keep the flow of content going? And it's nice to know that there is a plan, a vision, a timeline that isn't going to slip too much.
Yeah, hopefully. And 7.2 is a more classic patch but bursting with content from what we've seen, and then there will be a 7.25 and then the big 7.3, so it's they're really giving everything to everyone, so that is pretty cool. Heroes of the Storm was also featured. There wasn't a huge amount of news for heroes, there was a couple of new heroes and some new brawl mechanics that are asymmetrical, basically unlike other MOBAs in that specific brawl, Blackheart's Revenge. You have one team that needs to defend the core and one team that needs to attack. So that's a change from the usual MOBAs. And I've really enjoyed the brawls in Heroes. It allows me to jump in, play a little bit, and jump out, even though so I don't have to learn all of the talent builds and all of those things. I just go in and fight with my hero, and that's it. And there's another event coming, like last year, from November 15 to January 4th, where you can get some pretty cool bonuses, including a skin in Overwatch, which means I'm going to play that for
that's
sure.
At least 15 wins, isn't it? Get our Genji skins.
Is it 15 wins thinking, or 15
yeah,
games?
15 wins, I believe.
Ooh, okay.
And then it's 30 wins if you want to unlock the, I think, is it 6 or 5 heroes? And you get some good ones. So we'll see. I think it's one of those things that if you manage to get through the Genji stuff and enjoy it, you're going to keep going, and then you may keep going. So it'd be interesting to see how it kind of spins out in terms of last time they did an event like this, it ruined the game. You know, you had a load of people playing at the wrong skill level and just kind of noobing it up or destroying noobs. Now it seems to be more like just play games. So hopefully it's not a scenario where people who play the game feel that they're being punished to try and get extra players into the game.
Yeah, I'm a noob, so I don't really care.
Doesn't affect me. I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. There's a Heroes of the Storm of the Dorm documentary. I don't know if you saw it. It's available already.
No, I have zero interest in that, sadly.
Oh, really?
I don't like the fact that Blizzard spouts the think global line and never actually follows through with it. Heroes of the Dorm is the most American-centric thing you could imagine. There is no thought of doing that outside the US.
For those who don't know, it's a tournament that was modeled on basically the university sports competitions in the US, and it was a tournament with different university teams for Heroes of the Storm, where the winner would get tuition for the remainder of their university career.
So for me, it's just... I just don't like that in principle, that's such, I know it sounds so, pathetic, but I don't. So, I don't have an interest really in watching a documentary about it. I think, if it was something that they decided to try and find models that fit elsewhere in the world, and didn't worry too much about the pun. So it didn't have to be, Heroes of the Corn and it's only for corn farmers. It would just be nice if they did stuff. And that's why I like Overwatch League. Is Overwatch League, in principle, even if it does start in the US, they definitely have the right aspirations and plans to bring that global. And that makes sense. I think
so.
Something like Dorm was a kind of a spun out of an idea. And yeah, I don't know.
I see where you're coming from. And I agree that I would love to see something a little bit more global. But I also understand how sometimes if you want to get something done globally, it becomes so huge and so complicated that you end up not doing it at all.
Not doing it at all. No, yeah. I completely understand that as well. But if they can do it in America, why can't someone else do it in Europe?
I think it's not a thing for us though. The heroes, the university competitions isn't a thing for.
But that's
Europe.
What I'm saying. So you spin it out in some other way, but a heroes tournament for the rest of the world.
Well, there are tournaments for the rest of
not
the world.
From
there
Blizzard. You'd be like the world championships.
Yeah.
That there is for everything else. But no, that's not the same as Heroes of the Dorm, which is a separate thing with prize money. I don't know, and a story, and meant to be all high production value with backgrounds on the teams.
Right. In that sense, I get it. But so basically, you hate America. I understand.
No, I don't hate America. I love America. I wish I was American. So then I would be like,
but since you're not, then you're not getting the hype of Eurozone.
Exactly.
I get it. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, if you think it's something you might enjoy, the documentary is available on YouTube on the Heroes channel. It's about an hour and 10 minutes. And it's actually not very much focused on the game. It's much more focused on the stories of the players and humanizing the whole thing. Yeah, human interest. And it really works. I think it's something that even someone that doesn't especially like video games or esports could watch and enjoy. So I would recommend it. I've seen it. I've enjoyed it. And I thought it was cool. Hearthstone got a new expansion called Mean Streets of Gadgetzan, which has a bunch of different mechanics. There are cards that are usable by three different classes. There's weird new things, like one of the cards called Kazakas can, when you play it, the battle cry is that you're going to create a spell card. So you have basically, just like the discover mechanic, you can choose out of three properties three times. So you'll decide the mana cost for the first choice, and then another property, and then another property. So you'll have actually created a spell card.
Yeah, I think it goes like mana cost, heal, direct damage, AoE, and then the three types you can have from there, I think.
Right. Something like that.
I'd be interested, yeah.
It's a really clever way of putting together the creation of a card within the game. There are a bunch of other small mechanics. It focuses a lot on buffing a minion that is in your hand, or buffing minions that are in your hand, and there are things that synergize there. But overall, you play Hearthstone a lot. And I don't know if you've been playing it as much recently as you have before, but
yeah,
no, I sort of feel like Hearthstone is kind of in a lull. It feels like it got to the place where World of Warcraft was maybe 5 years after it was introduced. When a new expansion came out, it was like, oh, okay, well, okay, whatever, it's a new expansion, and not so much burning interest. Is that just me, or is it...
No, I think you're right. I think when you look at... I think from the perception of the game's media, the challenge WoW always had, I say always, but in recent memory, has been that it's a 10, 12-year-old game. And so... You know, people look at it and go like, oh, it's just the same stuff again, isn't it? Yeah, I know it's new. I know you've got like a new expansion, but what are you? Oh, the level cap's gone up. Okay. Oh, and you've got some new raids. Okay. Yeah. And you've introduced a new hero class. Okay. Well, yeah. It's never really as exciting as a new game or a new thing from a new game. Like the first Overwatch expansion, everyone will care about and read about and do all the rest. I think that Hearthstone... already, because of its accelerated kind of timeline of releases and things like that, I think it's it falls into this trap of
it's same.
It's kind of exactly just kind of lethargic almost of the news that much sooner. So as much as it is cool, like tri-class cards, very different. So now we have cards you can put in a deck that could be put in one of three different classes decks. So whereas paladins are always about buffing their minions and hunters are about kind of charging attacks and stuff like that, what happens if you have a card that allows you to start putting more charge and face damage stuff in the paladin deck? Or how does it work if you have now some of the more kind of buff focused cards in the hunter deck? Like what does this allow us to do? You know, some of these tri-class cards literally say discover a card from each of those classes. So you'll have, you know, a druid card, a mage card, and a priest card, or something like that. I don't know what the threes are. But then, you know, so you get these opportunities to do these plays that you could never otherwise currently do in the game. Or it'd be extremely hard and rare. So it does change things up. It does mix things up. It is exciting. However, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, it's another expansion. Yeah, I'm going to buy it, of course. Yeah, I look forward to that. And yeah, I'm sure it'd be really good. But it doesn't get me as excited as something like Overwatch League, where it's like, yeah, we're now going to introduce a whole new infrastructure and league setup, you know, something brand new. If Hearthstone had said, yeah, we're really getting behind Hearthstone as an esport, you know, it's been one of the most consistent esports out of Blizzard since StarCraft, and yet nothing. There's nothing in the game that allows for tournament play. They talked about doing heroic brawls and said they'd be out before BlizzCon. They weren't. If they'd held off that news till BlizzCon, I think I would have been coming away saying like, yeah, the expansion's cool, but man, heroic brawls, man, that's really cool. Because you've got to know that's leading towards kind of tournament play and having this sort of functionality in the game. But just as it stands, it was an expected release. You know, they teased the flavor of what it was going to be before BlizzCon. It's very cool. It's great. It's just, you know, it's not terribly surprising. Not that it needs to be, I guess, but I would have liked it to have been.
Yeah, it maybe it doesn't need to be surprising every time. Certainly, it's not a judgment so much as a realization that Hearthstone has reached that status a little bit faster than I would have expected, or maybe, I mean, I should have seen it coming. There are more expansions all the time. But yeah, we'll have to see if they manage to do something that brings specific interest to Hearthstone again with the next things they're going to do. But I'm sure they're aware of it as well, so we'll see. Diablo is doing a couple of interesting things. The first one is a special event for their 20th anniversary, which is called the Darkening of Tristram. And what happens is that for about a month, there's going to be a portion of the game where you can go, which is basically transformed to look as similar to Diablo 1 as possible. Yeah, it's retroified to make... But the thing is, everyone was thinking we're going to get an HD Diablo 1 or HD Diablo 2. And that's not what happened at all. It's basically the engine of Diablo 3 with, you know, not upgraded, but downgraded graphics. And retroified, as you said, with 16 levels from the original game, 4 bosses, etc. But the combat, the gameplay, is still going to be Diablo 3. It's not going to all of a sudden make it play like Diablo 1. So I think it's one of those things where people were like, yay, Diablo 1, Diablo 2, nostalgia, and in this one, I don't think they would love it if they got it. I mean, you can still go play Diablo 2 if you want, but I don't think they would love an HD version and play long term. But this doesn't even answer that question. So it's kind of, okay, it's going to be fun for a month and then whatever.
Yeah, I think the thing is, so this is fun for a month because it's only around for a month. Yeah. And so it's available on the PTR now. It's about 2 hours of experience.
You play through the drops, it.
Yeah, the drops aren't too spectacular. And the legendary gem, which you can level up further, but is probably the most annoying effect in the whole of Diablo. It periodically stuns you. And then
because it's the soul stone, you put it in yeah, your head.
Exactly. Thematically, yeah, it's great, and like the transmog is amazing, but it stuns you just randomly. So you might be, you know, TPing back to town and it will stun you and interrupt that. the actual effect itself of the kind of fire nova that comes out afterwards in all 8 glorious directions isn't tremendously powerful or good in any way, shape or form. So it's tricky. It's that sort of thing of, in some ways, be careful what you wish for. In other ways,
that is not what we wished for.
No, ways. Exactly. It was enjoyable as a sort of like, oh man, this looks great. The tinny sound and stuff like that. You know, I loved so much about it. And I think it was just, you know, because it's reasonably faithful to the original, which is an old game, which doesn't have the depth and breadth and complexity of Diablo 3. And yeah, I think it's great experience. It's just not that replayable So it being around for only a month is fine.
Makes sense.
It's just, yeah, it's just a question as to what else are they doing. The thing that I'm kind of frustrated around is the fact that we're not getting the Necromancer till the second half of next year.
Right.
So that's ages away.
Yeah, and the Necromancer is an interesting one as well. You mentioned it's coming out on second half of 2017. It's like probably not going to be out. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't out and, you know, for another
like
year,
August,
basically.
Exactly. I reckon we'll get it maybe Gamescom next year or something like that.
Yeah. And the way it's even more interesting than that, so it's the new character for Diablo 3 specifically, they're bringing the Necromancer, but the really interesting thing is that it's part of a character pack, which includes a couple extra tidbits, but basically it's going to be sold probably around $10, I'm guessing. So the new character will be sold, and that might be, if it goes well, I could see it happen a couple, you know, more than once. There could be
definitely
other characters, other little tidbits of content. So there was no big expansion announcement. There was no big Diablo 4 announcement, obviously. But those, I think that's an okay way.
Yeah,
new
zones,
yeah. And challenge rifts. There's a thing called challenge rifts, which is coming as well in 2017. There are a couple of extra things. So there's new content, but I could see, I think it's an interesting way. I think they decided, as we suspected for a while, that they're not going to be doing another expansion for Diablo 3. But that's a good way of still delivering some content. It's kind of a micro transaction kind of thing.
But what do you reckon they're working on? Because like,
I think they're working on Diablo 4.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. If I had a team working on this hero, I wouldn't expect to announce it now and not have it out till next year, second half. Unless I've got a very small team working on that and everyone else is busy on blowing us away with something. But then would you make another action RPG like that? Or would
That's
it be like Dark Souls? Or I don't know what Diablo 4 would look like if they would change the genre and if they're feeling kind of brave enough to, you know, looking from a history of StarCraft.
I think that would be amazing, but
it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I think it would lend itself well to the kind of Dark Souls type model of big hulking monsters, very hard difficulty, but that kind of third person action, less so than the isometric classic play. But maybe it's too different from Diablo for it to be called Diablo. I don't know.
I think it could work, but it would definitely not be as hard as Dark Souls. There would be ways to approach it a lot more casually. But, you know, Blizzard has always done this. They brought games that were a little bit niche, although I guess you can't really say Dark Souls and Bloodborne are niche anymore. But still, to an extent. And bringing them to the masses. I think there would be something there, and it could fit in the Diablo universe for sure, but regardless of what it is, I'm sure they're working on the next Diablo game. So I don't know, we'll see. And that we're not going to hear about for another year.
Well, at least, you know, we're not even getting this hero till then, but oh well.
And finally, StarCraft 2 has more co-op, one new commander, and then this announcement of DeepMind from Google, which is basically going to be able to play, it's a computer, an AI, that's going to be able to play StarCraft 2. That's going to be interesting. It was a little bit, some people thought it was out of place in the presentation, in the opening ceremony. I thought it was cool, but some people didn't agree. Regardless,
I didn't like it.
Regardless, StarCraft 2 is getting some more content, which I think is awesome for people who like StarCraft 2. Haven't played it in a while. And the other thing I think of note for StarCraft 2 was the fact that my understanding, I haven't heard about the finals for the esports tournament at BlizzCon. But in general, Overwatch, the stage was packed. Hearthstone, pretty packed. Heroes, pretty packed as well. StarCraft 2, more than half empty, almost empty, almost every day until the finals. And
really?
That's what I've heard. Maybe the finals was packed as well.
That'll hurt Morheim.
Yeah.
But he loves that game. The thing is it's the market's moved on. RTS is now MOBAs. And, you know, StarCraft 2 were a MOBA. That's Heroes now, sadly. But that's where the audience has moved to. And I think even the players, the fact that we've got non-Korean champions in StarCraft 2 is partly that, you know, people are good across the world, but it's also partly because other players have moved on to other games with bigger prize pools. So the actual skill that exists within the game has shrunk. So I don't know. I think StarCraft 2 is, you know, a great experience, one of the best single player RTS experiences that you can have. And the multiplayer is fantastic. But if you play it now, there's like XP. You level up as you play more multiplayer games. You get different items and drops and the Archon modes. And there's all these different game modes that were never there. The arcade is still there, and there's so many different games on there. But chiefly, it just doesn't have the sex appeal you get from something like Overwatch, or the kind of welcoming side that you get from something like Hearthstone. So it's in a tricky place, and you got to wonder, you know, what would you do with StarCraft from here?
Well, that's the question. What do you think? So the team that works on StarCraft, that worked on StarCraft, my understanding is it's been split in two. One is now working on Heroes, and the other one was finishing StarCraft with Legacy of the Void, and now some of this new, again, micro content, micro transaction-y content that we're seeing. But the StarCraft team, I'm sure it's not the entirety of the team that's working on those little tidbits. What do you think they're working on, and what would you hope or wish they would be working on?
See, I don't know, really. I think chiefly a lot of the kind of big genres have already been taken. So it's not like, hey, guys, go back and make Ghost, but make it good. Because we've got Overwatch now in terms of having a Blizzard take on a shooting genre. You know, StarCraft as an MMO, I don't think I really want or care about that. You know, with WoW, I've not got enough time.
They could do an RTS. They could do StarCraft 4, 3 or WarCraft 4. I don't think they are. I don't think
they would, though, again, because
RTS,
it just wouldn't make sense. I mean, to be honest with you, I'd probably like to have like a really cool tower defense game on mobile.
I kind of agree, yeah.
I think something like that would be really cool. But even then, obviously, it wouldn't be a game that set the world on fire like they're used to making. But maybe they know how to make a really cool tower defense game. I don't know. Who knows?
I think I would be very... I've said many times I'd love to see a fighting game from Blizzard. I don't know if the StarCraft team is the one to do it, but God knows they know about balance. So that could be interesting. And I'm wondering if there is some VR things happening. Maybe not there, but in the incubator. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, we don't know. Well, that one, I don't see an RTS happening anytime soon, even from that team. But maybe they'll surprise us. Lastly, I guess that's it for BlizzCon proper. But there was something that happened basically the day after BlizzCon. The Nostalrius, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Nostalrius. Yeah, that's
right. The people behind the Nostalrius Legacy server, or WoW Classic, I can't even remember how their private server. They were running, it made a lot of noise a few months ago. They were running a private server for WoW that was still in 1.0 mode, vanilla mode, the old original World of Warcraft. And Blizzard exercised their legal power to get them to close. And then there was a lot of controversy. Some people were saying, well, doesn't matter if it's there. You don't run WoW in version 1.0, so why do you care if they're doing it? But there was some money involved, and there's some intellectual property protection involved. And the controversy grew, and they invited the mods from that private server to Blizzard, had a long discussion, a bunch of things happened, and then Blizzard didn't say anything. And so the mods ended up saying, we are releasing the source code we have for our service so anyone can go and do one, because Blizzard isn't doing anything and that's intolerable, was the tone of their thing. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I get why Blizzard... So Blizzard calling them in now is very much kind of looking like damage control and just being like, hey, guys, maybe we can just shut these guys up if we kind of, oh, we'll take them in, we'll listen to them, talk to them, nod our heads. Hey, Mike, do you want to chat to them? Yeah, great. If it shuts them up, yeah. So it's a shame that there's not more of a statement, I guess, from Blizzard one way or the other in terms of like, yeah, you know, we looked into it and it's just not possible for us. And I think that truthfully is it. You know, it would be like releasing a second MMO, all of the support. You think about everyone trying to log on there and then, oh, it doesn't work with my system, or, oh, my character doesn't work. You know, the GMs, they've almost got to kind of double up all their customer support again. The infrastructure, the client release. And then it also, Blizzard is a company that always prides itself on the product they have now, and always refining that and iterating on it further. To release an older, you know, broken game in many cases just isn't in their DNA. And certainly there's a lot of people out there who do enjoy playing the old game. But legally, if Blizzard allows it to exist, they lose the copyright on that and the IP protection around that. So they're in a, you know, rock hard place. They can't just say, yeah, go crazy. And equally, they can also say, as Blizzard as a company, oh, yeah, we can support this and financially ensure this is, you know, as it should be for everything else, because there's just not the incentive. If WoW wasn't doing well, yeah, I'm sure they'd be doing this themselves and being like, how do we get people back in? Well, a lot of people just want to play the old game. Okay, cool. Well, let's work on doing that. You know, well, whereas it's doing really well.
Every time they've tried a little bit of that, it everyone's realized, well, we don't really want it. I mean, I'm sure, you know, yeah, it's the Molten Core thing they did for the anniversary, yeah, and a bunch of other things. I'm sure there are some people who like it, obviously, because they're very dedicated to that. But beyond that, I think it's a little bit of a shitty move from the nostalgic guys, because it's kind of, it feels like, you know, Blizzard is the owner of something and they're saying we want people to use it that way, and they work on it a lot. I don't think you can accuse Blizzard of not, you know, it's not like they released a thing and then they shut it down and you can't play it anymore because you don't have access to the servers, like, you know, after a year, like it happens sometimes on some games. In this case, you can't accuse them of not working on the thing, and it's sort of those guys saying, well, we don't care what you want, we're going to do it that way. There's a kind of, I understand the words are a little bit over the top, but there's a little bit of a violence in this, like saying, F you, Blizzard, yeah, we don't care what exactly you want, we're going to do what we want with your
it's called
thing,
burning bridges,
right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's like, I have a, you know, I have a sandwich, and someone is taking it, and it's like, yeah, that doesn't work. I was going to go like, and they replace the lettuce with tomatoes. And I'm like, but I don't want you to put tomatoes in my sandwich. And I understand it's not the same thing, but there's something of an invasive element to this, of them saying, well, we know you don't want it to be used like that. We don't care. We're going to release it anyway. And people are going to be playing it, you know. So I know it's a controversial issue, and I'm sure some people might think, this is me being tainted by my love for the company and my history with the company, but I think it's really uncool. Not like uncool as in not cool, man, but like it's a douchey move to do that and to force upon the owner of that thing the use that they don't want to have for many reasons. So
yeah, but again, it's that it feels quite immature in just that they don't acknowledge or respect the reasons why Blizzard can't and won't do this, and almost kind of just being quite childish and being like, well, you know what? Well, screw you. I'm just going to put it anyway. And it's just like, okay, great, cool.
Yeah, so that's that's the way it feels to me. If you have another opinion on the matter, please do come to the site at frenchspin.com and let us know why you think it's actually a good, fun, cool, classy idea. But yeah, I think we're aligned on that we don't think it really is awesome. All right, other than that was a long big segment on Blizzard, but there's not only BlizzCon happening in the world of video games. Another significant piece of news is that report that came out this morning that we have... Wait, I want to find the... Oh, I don't have the link. Oh, no. I wanted to give credit to the person that's been doing the reporting. I'll find it. Okay. But basically...
The one above it. It's the cell above.
Oh, is it? Well,
play video games.
Okay, there okay. you go. It's Laura Kate Dale who published this rumor slash leak of the price of the Nintendo Switch, which is apparently going to be 199 quid. That's pounds for people who live in the UK. Should probably translate to $249, probably 249 euros, something like that, for the base SKU. And then there would be a more expensive version with more internal memory for $299. Oh, sorry, did I say 249? For the pound price, it's actually 199 for the base SKU for the pound price, and then the more internal memory version for 249. Translates to $249 and $299. Cheaper than I thought it was going to be if the base SKU is
a lot cheaper. It's almost of the price where you start thinking, oh, maybe I'll get it. Just because, you know, it's a strange console. I still don't quite understand yet. I think in terms of where does it fit? Is it competing for my pocket space? Is it not? You know, like the tricky thing now is phones are so good. I don't quite see. I think, to be honest with you, I can see it being like I'm playing on the TV. My wife or child wants to watch something. I'm like, okay, sweet. And I switch to the handheld. That works. Or like, oh, I'm on a tricky boss.
That's but sort of the expansion of the...
So then I'm going to go and do that. You know, I can see how it works. I just... The whole thing just felt like, you know, you come around and suddenly I snap my console in half and you get half, I get half, and we carry on playing. And then two more friends come over. We both break ours in half and give them one. Until the end, everyone's
got a
button.
All right, so that's the concept of the console. Right, so is you're tepid on the console itself. For £199 again, that's probably £249 for us actual money people.
Yeah, I mean, by then, I don't know what that would mean in terms of our currency, but yeah.
But do you, so for that price, do you go like, yeah, okay, whatever, that's cheap enough that I'll just get it and see if I like it?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I'd have to see what's on there first, how it's playing.
Well, it's going to be Nintendo games, right?
Yeah, exactly. If it's got like a new Zelda, yeah, sure, why not?
Well,
yeah,
it's going to have the Breath of the Wild, right?
So is that at launch?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, then I'll buy it. Yeah, of course.
Okay,
yeah.
Then you're getting it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the price.
Sad.
The price is really interesting. I think that is, as I've said a few times, for if we speak in euros or dollars, $299 is the price I expected, and then lower it after a few months to $249. If the base model starts at $249 or euros, I think that is a really compelling price. It is that price now, and then you start seeing super compelling packs and bundles a few months after that, and for the holiday season, that I think is the right move for Nintendo. Again, if that price is real, they usually don't lose money. They don't sell consoles at a loss. I could see them doing the base model at the break-even price, but it makes sense that they're using the very low power or not very powerful GPUs and CPUs, you know, the Tegra thing, if they can bring the price down to those levels. So we'll see. It's definitely less than I thought it was going to be. If it's confirmed, I think it's a very, very clever move, because that is the way that they're going to get a good start and get people to buy it. Get it 50 units under the PlayStation 4 Xbox One S price. So we'll see what happens there. One thing that people have been basically rushing to get is the NES Classic. Apparently, it's
gone.
Yeah, straight away. Everywhere. Did you get one?
Yeah. No, of course not. I mean, I'll get a SNES. I won't get a NES, though.
Yeah, I could be interested in a SNES Classic, but I don't. You know, all of those things, the Amiibos, the NES Classic, the I understand the love for the brand, and I certainly have a lot of love for Nintendo, but it's.
It's a great Christmas present for one of these. If you've got someone who, you know, played a lot of SNES back in their youth, to get them something like this, I mean, amazing. I think it's an amazing product. You know, all the games are on there.
It's the kind of thing
that
you plug in three times and you never plug it in again.
But that's what a Christmas present is. That's great.
I guess so.
This isn't, you know, it's got such classics as Dr. Mario, Donkey Kong Jr., Galaga, Ice Climber, and Super Mario Bros. 1, 2, and 3. It's all right. It's got some good games on there. It really does. It's just, you know, 30 games on there. It's normally, what was it, $60?
Yeah. Now it's going for $500
now
on
eBay.
It's like
$600, exactly. Yeah. It's ridiculous, really. Just because people bought them and then thought, well, actually, this is worth far more if I just sell it. And that's it. And that's a sad thing. It's like, you know, Nintendo don't make enough, but then they stick to their whole, you know, we want it to be affordable. It's a family product. But then people just take advantage of that. It's a real shame.
The final number of Wii U's shipped is going to be 13.6 million. And that is a saddeningly low number. Just to give a comparison, because now the reason I'm saying the final number is that production has stopped for the Wii U, and all of the
did it even need to get started though with that number? That's ridiculous.
What?
Did it even need to start with that number? You know, production, that's tiny.
So to give you a point of comparison, the highest selling console was the Wii, of course, which sold over 100 million units. That was an amazing success. The next one that sold the least was the GameCube, and that sold a little over 20 million units, and that was, you know, 15 years ago.
The GameCube was up against, Xbox 360 or Xbox One. No, Xbox One it would have been.
No.
Xbox One.
GameCube was Xbox. Oh, I can't even remember. But
no, I think Xbox, not One, sorry, the original Xbox. Sorry, so the original Xbox, PlayStation 2. You know, the GameCube was a huge mistake in hardware. You know, it used those little weird micro CDs, couldn't play DVDs. But it still had some good games on there.
And it was 15 years ago. It came out 15 years ago. And again, sold 21 million units. And that was at a time when video games weren't as, you know, popular as they are now. And still, it did almost twice as much as the Wii U. So I don't know how many different ways I can say it, but to gauge the enormity of the failure of the Wii U, I guess that is one additional way. It's sad, really. I really hope that the Switch does better. Another one that is kind of a little bit of a puzzler still. I mean, the PlayStation 4 has been selling really well. We're almost at 50 million units sold worldwide now, 47.4. So the number keeps rising, obviously, and with the holiday season, I suspect it's going to blow past the 50 million mark. And the PlayStation 4 Pro is out, and it's still, I mean, I don't know. I don't really want one. I don't have a 4K TV, but I have a couple of friends who got one, who sold their PlayStation 4 regular, and figured, you know, I'm going to get the warranty re-upped and stuff like that with the Pro. It gets as warm and does about the same amount of noise as the regular PlayStation. So if you were hoping for something a little bit less noisy, no luck there. But aside from that, some games are upgraded. I think it's a little bit early to see the benefits, especially if you don't have a 4K TV. Terps, are you going to buy a PlayStation Pro for Pro?
No, I can't see myself doing it, in all fairness.
Do you have a regular 4?
I do. I've got a regular 4. And I don't play it enough to want to double down and get a pro. Just not for me.
Yeah, I think unless you have a 4K TV, in which case it kind of makes sense. Unless you have it, then it's probably not even worth considering. It's the kind of thing, if you already want one, you kind of know it, and if you're not sure, then it means you don't need or want one. That's a good way of approaching it. Cool. Infinite Warfare is out, the yearly Call of Duty. It's not selling as well as previous years' Call of Duties. That's been a regular occurrence for the series, but it's still selling okay. We're into the games coming up and such section of the show. Call of Duty is not one that I'm incredibly excited for.
No. I mean, it's suffering again from that kind of that lethargic pace that they all come with after this many releases. Battlefield managed to get people excited by going back to the beginning, before the beginning, to World War One, big flashy trailer, great visuals, gameplays. Very similar to original stuff, but more people have been excited around Battlefield than around COD. COD's
I'm sure it's selling better, though. COD is always selling better.
We have to see for the next one. How many times do you have a lackluster launch? The reason that Infinite Warfare will sell well is it comes with the remastered Modern Warfare maps on there, and so that's all people really wanted forever.
Guess
was
so.
To be back with Captain Price and Soap taking out people back in the day.
I'm wondering where they're gonna go with the next one. That's indeed a good question. Are they gonna,
it's gonna
go
be
even farther
dimensional
up in space,
warfare or? We're gonna go into like alternate realities, or maybe it'd be on Jupiter.
Temporal
like
warfare.
Exactly. Come on, guys, just put it back in, we're in Roman times.
Ooh.
Here we are. The Turin Warfare.
That would be interesting. Classic history warfare. You don't have M16s and stuff.
You do.
Like that.
No, you do, because there's been a temporal anomaly.
Nice.
But everyone else is. And that's why, the Senate's trying to lock it down. But it's all right. We're going to clear them out up ahead. UAV online. And it's just an eagle.
And then you can play it in VR.
Sold.
Dishonored 2 is coming out. It's out.
I think it is.
No,
is it?
Is it?
Oh, no.
I think it's
okay.
Tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow we're recording this.
I played it.
You did? Good. What did you think? Yeah. Did you play that one level that everyone played?
No. I've been playing it. I got it.
Oh, so you got it because you got it in advance. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Review.
Well, I think
full
the embargo's
you
gone.
Have to talk
I think the embargo's gone.
Minutes.
I think the embargo's gone. I liked it. There have been some funny reviews on it, though. People have been weird. Like on Steam, it's currently sat on 6 out of 10. I would say it's a solid gameplay experience. I liked it. It's fast. It's there's a lot going on. Story still works. I really liked it, but people are complaining just about the kind of the quality of the PC port. That seems to be the downfall there. That's okay then. I didn't play on PC.
Is it playable on consoles as well? I mean, is it good?
I played it on Xbox One I really enjoyed it.
Did you finish it?
I played the first one. No, but okay. I got a bit into it. I don't know what I'm allowed to say. I think I'm fairly sure the embargo's gone. It is, I think, a really, really solid game. I think if you liked the first one, you'll love this one.
What if you liked the idea of the first one but played for 5 to 10 hours and then got bored?
I think it's a similar sort of kind of formula in terms of the play style and kind of how you try and dissect the game. It really depends how you like to play. Like the level design is really, really good, There's a lot of different ways to tackle it. I always like trying to go in as kind of sneaky as I can, and then obviously I always fail, and I'm just blowing people up left, right, and center, and stabbing people and blinking into people.
That's usually what I do as well, yeah.
Exactly, and I enjoyed it. I didn't get bored so far with what I got to. I like the kind of the stealthy bits more, I guess, than the kind of frantic stabbing everyone in sight, just because I think, I don't know, it was more enjoyable that way. Like I said, I've still got more to play, but I think it's I honestly think it's a really, really good game. I'm surprised to see it so low on Steam, but by looks things, it just seems to be Steam, about, you know, a bad port.
Yeah, there's apparently it's because it requires a lot more power for the ultra high settings than they thought it would, so that might explain it. But a lot of the quality of the first one was about the world building and the fantasy of that weird reality that you're immersed in. Is it as alien and fascinating in this one?
Yeah, it's more the same, but you know, again, bigger, built upon. I would say I'm fairly sure you'll like it.
Okay, well, maybe I will give it a try.
I think visually it was a lot more impressive than the first one. Not everything was nighttime, the enemies are petrifying, but you know, it's got a great visual style to it. Everyone kind of looks a bit like they're out of an oil painting. I really liked it.
Watch Dogs 2 is coming out soon as well. I think tomorrow too. It's still, you know, it still looks to me, there's been a bunch of other trailers. It still looks to me as Grand Theft Auto San Francisco. It really has that vibe, and that's what it's being made to look like in the trailers. I don't know if that's what it is in reality. There was a fun little thing that came out today, which is basically you can hack into a server of something and get a leaked trailer for an E3 thing that is apparently Ubisoft's possibly next game announced at E3. And we don't know if it's kind of them making fun of the leaks, or if it's actually them teasing something that they're going to announce. But it's I like this kind of little playing with the players, playing with the gamers. And it's something around space. It doesn't really matter all that much, but that's kind of a funny thing. Aside from that, my friends...
It's real.
Yeah. My friends who have been playing it are kind of not overly enthusiastic about it, which... I don't know if it means anything, but I'll definitely, for both of those, I'll wait for the reviews before investing my hard-earned cash. But yeah, so it's something I'm not unexcited about, but cautious, let's say. Maybe I'm more interested in Dishonored 2 than Watch Dogs 2.
Yeah, I'd say so. Mm.
Final Fantasy 15, I've been on and off about. By the way, they're doing a mobile MMO, and the developer is Machine Zone, which is, wait, don't get too enthusiastic. You know Game of War Fire Age?
Yeah.
Right. The developer of that is doing that. Ooh. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
So... That is basically my reaction. All right. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Never mind. Forget.
Is it going to be like an asynchronous one, or
no idea?
Is it just going to be like Mariah Carey and Kate Upton feeding each other up whilst some like weird Japanese boy bands in the background, and then just be Final Fantasy 15?
Yeah, with some
you
crystal.
Become the dream or basically. Something like that. It's like, yeah, sweet. I don't know what this is. I've downloaded it though.
So yeah, I saw Kingsglaive the movie. From Final Fantasy 15. Have you seen it?
Oh, really? No. What is it? I don't know what it is.
It's basically a pre-game movie that sets up the entire thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you got to watch a movie before you can play the game. Wow.
Yeah. Well,
it's basically the same every time, isn't it?
You don't
have to. I remember with 13, I played for like 13 hours, and it was like, okay, you've completed the tutorial. It's like, what? So I look forward to watching the 2-hour movie before even picking up a controller.
So You don't have to, again. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I was very apprehensive. It's not horrible. It's okay. It's an okay movie. Some of the technical aspects are mind-blowing. Some of them are underwhelming. Some of the motion capture is really, really good. And the animation, and some of it is meh. It's okay. It's a little bit infuriating at times. The, you know, there's two female characters in the movie. One dies in the first, I won't tell you who, dies in the beginning. And the other one is, well, okay, whatever. The first one dies. The second one is a princess that keeps getting rescued. I'm a little bit sensitive to that. So that rubbed me the wrong way. That's not why I didn't love the movie, though. I thought it was good for world building, but it wasn't fascinating in a way that made me, you know, want to play the game immediately because I wanted to follow up on that experience. So we'll see how good it is compared to the game. But I think out of the three we just mentioned, Dishonored, Watch Dogs, and Final Fantasy, I think Final Fantasy is the one I'm the most excited about. Maybe because it's been way a long time since I've been immersed in a Final Fantasy game. But yeah.
I'm apprehensive about Final Fantasy. Like I said, I've been burnt before. So I won't buy it when it comes out, and I don't think I'll actually buy it full stop. But if I do, it will be after everyone's told me it's the best one ever. And even then, I'll probably just watch videos on it.
Yeah, I can understand that. There's a magic of Final Fantasy I'm hoping to see reignited, but I know not a very realistic hope. So we'll see. Also coming out in November, apparently Gran Turismo Sport is coming out. I didn't even realize it was so far off my radar. And of course, Pokemon Sun and Moon coming out. Are you into Pokemon? Are you going
to
play those?
Yeah, I like Pokemon. I'm not necessarily going to be catching them all. But I enjoy.
You're
going to
catch a couple.
I'll catch a couple. Have fun with that.
And finally, there was a cinematic trailer for Mass Effect Andromeda, celebrating N7 Day. Those who have played Mass Effect will know what this refers to. But, you know, I found myself surprisingly excited about Mass Effect Andromeda. I loved the first Mass Effect. Meh, the second one, didn't really play the third one. And watching that one made me want to go back and play the third one.
Mm. I mean, the thing they've always done well is aliens. And you get a little taste of some of the aliens in this. It'll be fun to see kind of what they do with the whole sort of like we've traveled to the other side of the universe now. You know, we've got a whole blank slate. Let's carry on in this world, but without necessarily having to acknowledge Shepard and the player's actions every four pieces of dialogue. I'm all for more from the Mass Effect world, so bring it on. I think it'd be really good.
Well, is it a day one purchase for you?
Yeah.
Oh, this really? Definitely be a day. Okay. Yeah, have you done all three previous episodes?
Yep, played them all. I got all the endings. I got red, green, and blue. All the endings. That's a Mass Effect 3 joke for people who enjoy the diversity and differing choices that your choices make. It's very disappointing.
Which one was the best in your opinion?
excuse me. They're all very much the same. That's the problem. so I would go with the green one, I think, where everyone becomes something. Yeah.
What?
I don't know. I would say it's going to be weird not having Shepard and Rex and, you know, people like that. However, the idea is that, you know, we're people, and I don't think it's just humans, but maybe it is just humans who've been on the ship to find the new home.
I don't know. I think it's like that's what's in the trailer. There's three arcs, three ships, and they each have one primary race on them. So you're in the human ship, and there are a couple of other ships with the other races. And and you go to the Andromeda Galaxy. It's basically a 600 years travel, and you get there. And what I worry about is that you get there, and it's basically, you know, more of the same. It's like, oh, it's that guy that, you know, he has a little weird antenna on the center of his skull, but that's basically it. And he's like, oh, hey, how's it going, Riker? And that's what I fear. I fear that because the idea of going to an entirely new and different galaxy is enticing. It's, you know, the wonderful promise of discovery and exploration. And that is what I found in the first one, where you were a lot more free of your movement, going to different planets and different, you know, locations. And in the subsequent ones, you were a little bit more restricted. But so that is what I enjoy in the promise of that game. I really do worry that the discovery is going to end up being, oh, another spaceport by some race that has been here forever, and you just show up and it's business as usual. So I wonder if they're going to be able to translate that feeling of discovery in the game. And that's going to, I think that is what my attraction for it is going to hinge on. But we'll see. Anyway, I think that is going to be it for this episode of the show. Thank you so much, Mark, for being on with me. Where would people go if they wanted to hear more of your incredibly insightful commentary on gaming and other things?
Oh, you go to google.com and you type in Terps or Terpster and you'll find me.
Terps works as well?
Yeah. It does. Well, you also get a prostate examination. but if you can get past that, some of those things are me. Or you get stuff about turpentine, which is like paint thinner. So, yeah, you'll figure it out.
Okay. And the _T on Twitter.
That's me.
That is you. For me, it's not Patrick on Twitter, not Patrick on Facebook. You can also find the show notes at frenchspin.com. And as I said during the show, if you have something to yell at us about, you can go to frenchspin.com to the notes of this episode and leave a comment, for example. You can also yell at me on Twitter and Facebook. That is equally enjoyable. So you can do that. That is it for this episode. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with another bunch of gaming news. Excellent. See you then.
Shazam. Bye bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.